Hello, and welcome to the Glenveagh Properties PLC results for period ending 31st of December 2018 call. My name is Emily, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. Please note that this call is being recorded. If you require assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you'll be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Justin Bickel, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Thanks for your patience getting on the line, everybody. We were very oversubscribed for this call, which is a good sign, so apologies if some of you had difficulty getting in. Welcome everyone to the Glenveagh annual results call. Joining me here in Dublin are my colleagues, Stephen Garvey, Michael Rice, and Conor Murtagh. I'm pleased to report on our progress during our first full year as a business. 2018 was a strong execution year at Glenveagh, where we exceeded all of our key targets. The firm foundations we laid during the year gave us significant momentum heading into 2019, where the team continued to outperform and have gotten off to a fast start in having 451 sales, either closed, signed, or reserved in the first two months of trading against our 725 2019 target. Notwithstanding any current uncertainties caused by Brexit or last year's conflicting data around cost inflation, Irish residential continues to be an attractive sector. There is significant demand for housing of all types and tenures, and still relatively limited supply versus historical norms. During the period, we bought land well, we're building well, and as our business matures, we will be a full service offering covering the build to sell, PRS, and mixed tenure segments. We are making solid progress in deploying the capital we raised last summer by continuing to find attractive off-market land acquisitions, and our deployment schedule is on track. If I can ask you please to turn to slide four in the presentation, you'll see we there set out our operational highlights. There are a few takeaways from this slide. First, we've continued to grow our flexible development land bank during the period by continuing to execute accretive off-market deals. Second, the construction team have done a good job of opening and building quickly on our sites. Thirdly, almost 75% of our output is targeted at starter homes, which is the deepest and most value for money segment. Finally, we've created a high caliber organization, which now stands at 270 full-time employees and over 1,000 subcontractors, and was recently recognized in Ireland as a Great Place to Work, which is a nice accolade for such a young business. Michael will discuss our financial results next, but suffice to say on slide five, that in exceeding our 2018 targets, we generated revenue of 84.2 million euro, inclusive of land sales, with a healthy gross margin of 18.2%, and of course, exceeded our first year sales target by 10%, namely we did 275 versus the 250 target. We're continuing to invest in off-market land, given favorable sector conditions, and have now deployed over half of the capital we raised last summer and are on track to deploy the remainder. Turning to slide six, I'm pleased to confirm that we exchanged contracts to acquire two sites in the Greater Dublin area via an off-market transaction for a consideration of approximately 50 million euro as part of Project Arrow. The sites, located in Leixlip and Newbridge, County Kildare, currently have full planning permission for 793 units. The execution of Project Arrow further strengthens Glenveagh's focus on delivering starter homes in the Greater Dublin area. With the benefit of strong planning permissions, construction is expected to commence on these sites in H2 2019, with the first units closing in 2020. Further acquisitions totaling 26 million euro and 730 units across three Greater Dublin area sites are now in exclusivity. We have 90 million of capital remaining and are on track to deploy it. Slide seven provides a summary overview of the Glenveagh business over the medium term as the company matures into a full service offering. Consistent with our IPO messaging, there are three attractive verticals for us to capture. These are build to sell, PRS, and mixed tenure. We feel that these verticals complement each other and allow us to utilize all of the resources and capabilities of our group across the cycle. The Glenveagh Homes team have done a good job of executing on the build to sell opportunity, outperforming all their year one targets. Meanwhile, PRS over the last 12 months has become the hottest asset class in Irish property, and has grown from 4% of investment transactions in Dublin in 2015 to 40% in Q4 last year. This tenfold increase in activity has occurred as a result of a significant weight of overseas capital looking to access PRS in Dublin, estimated by agents to be some €7 billion, and the pent-up demand among tenants for rental living. We are considering how best to monetize our PRS exposures across the group and will update the market on that further in due course. We see mixed tenure as being a medium and long-term opportunity for the group and one where there are significant barriers to entry for non-POCs. We are currently tendering for 2,000 units with local authorities in the mixed tenure space and expect more progress in this vertical during 2019. As we have explained previously, both PRS and mixed tenure will allow us to achieve our long-term ROCE targets. Finally, before I hand over to Michael on the financials, slide 8 summarises our principal achievements during 2018 and outlines our key priorities in 2019. Looking back at 2018, the business made strong progress in buying land, master planning and building while keeping costs under control. Locking in over 60% of our year-end sales targets for 2019 after only 2 months of trading, namely 451 sold, signed or reserved against 725 annual target, gives us confidence that 2019 will be another successful year for the business and allows us to focus on 2020 and beyond. Given that we believe that we have significantly de-risked 2019 already, our key focus during the remainder of this year is as follows. We will deploy our remaining capital raise monies with more accretive off-market land acquisitions. We'll continue to evaluate our PRS monetization options across the business and progress our mixed tenure offering. And we'll continue to put health and safety, quality, customer service and sustainability at the heart of our activities. Looking to the medium term, we believe that our three verticals, build to sell, PRS and mixed tenure, will serve us well and differentiate us from our peers. And with that, I'll hand over to Michael on the financials.
Thanks, Justin. Morning, everyone, and thanks very much for joining the call. If we firstly look at the income statement on slide 10, and as Justin has already mentioned, we had a very strong year from a revenue perspective, with it coming in just over $84 million split between unit and land sales. We completed the sale of 275 units in the year with revenue of $79 million and an ASP of $287,000. This ASP was reflected strong starter home sales with a small number of units from our two higher-end developments, Proby Place and Holsteiner Park, falling into 2019. We also had land sales of $5 million from the sale of a number of our smaller sites, which we have highlighted for the last 12 months as being non-core. We had a very strong gross margin performance in the year of $15.3 million and a corresponding gross margin of 18.2%. The group's main gross margin target has always been 20% in 2020, and I think the 2018 margin performance should give comfort that this target is certainly achievable. Our central costs for the year were $17.2 million, which along with $200,000 of depreciation and amortization gives a pre-exceptional operating loss of $2.1 million. Finance costs for the year of $1.4 million relate to a revolving credit facility, which we finalised last March, giving an overall loss for the year of $3.5 million pre-exceptional items of $400,000 relating to the capital raise done in August. If we move over to the balance sheet on slide 11, you will see the significant investments that we've made in the year. We increased inventory from $228 million in the prior year to $719 million at 31 December. This is made up of $618 million in development land and $101 million in work in progress relating to our 14 active sites. This investment in the group's inventory is also seen in the reduction in cash from $351 million in the prior year to $131 million at 31 December. This cash movement includes the $206 million net of costs from the group's equity placing in August. Overall, the group's net assets have increased by just over $202 million to $843 million at 31 December. This investment is also clear from the cash flow statement on slide 12. As you can see, the net cash outflows from operational and investing activities of $426 million, with net outflow on operating activities of $401 million, predominantly related to the increase in inventory, and $25 million on the purchase of property, plant and equipment, intangible assets, and a subsidiary undertaking. Within financing activities, you will see the $206 million raised from the equity placing and also our RCF activity in the year. We drew down $26 million from our facility in two separate tranches during the year, and the full amount was repaid before year-end to minimise the group's interest cost. Moving over to slide 13, we set out our group targets. So really, we're reiterating our group targets for profitability and investment. We continue to hold guidance from last year on our homes delivery targets with 2,000 units in 2022, with further volume to be provided once all capital proceeds are deployed. For the living portfolio, we continually actively manage the sites in terms of planning, with East Road now in the SHD process, while also exploring forward fund arrangements for these developments, which would give us funding for our working capital requirements. We set out our homes ASPs for 2019 and 2020 and reaffirm our long-term strategy of focusing on the starter home and sub-350 market in the longer term. Our target gross margin continues to be 20% in 2020, and we believe that our 2018 margin performance gives a strong indication of our ability to achieve that target. Our balance sheet guidance is focused on three key areas. We forecast our land bank to peak at circa 15,000 units once we have deployed the remaining capital, and we are very much on track to do that. We then expect to manage our land bank to approximately 5 years output once the business is at scale. Our work in progress for homes housing developments continues to be circa 6 to 8 million, with the group's strategy to forward fund any large-scale apartment PRS developments. As set out in the cash flow statement, the group had no debt at year-end, but we expect to utilise our facility to a greater extent in 2019 to finance the working capital requirements of new and existing sites. With that, I'll pass you to Stephen to run through our development portfolio and pipeline.
Thanks, Michael. Good morning, all. If you can turn to page 15, please. As Justin has mentioned earlier, our land bank now comprises of over 12,600 units. We have continued to grow our development portfolio, mainly through off-market transactions. The majority of our sites are located in the Greater Dublin area at 81%, with approximately 85% of our land bank sitting within the homes business. And two-thirds of the total units expected to be houses. This is in line with the land strategy that we set out at IPO. Most of our product focused on the starter home market, with 74% of our product offering priced at 350 or below. The land bank we have assembled offers multiple exit strategies with the ability to deliver returns as either build-to-sell or PRS product. In addition, we believe that up to a quarter of the homes portfolio is suitable for PRS. If turning to page 16, in 2018, we moved quickly to de-risk our long-term sales by building a land bank focused on starter homes. We have developed an attractive portfolio by focusing on assembling sites in solid locations in the Greater Dublin area and balancing our site size and portfolio mix, allowing for more optionality in deliveries as we continue to ramp up construction within the homes business. With this approach, we have been able to reduce our site cost per unit and our site cost as a percentage of NDV. Our land bank has moved closer to Dublin, and we have assembled at attractive rates in the context of both site cost circa 50,000 today versus 56 at IPO, and the site cost as a percentage of NDV today is 17% versus 22% at IPO. Turning to page 17, as discussed earlier in slide 6, we have now invested over $600 million from the net proceeds we raised with approximately $90 million of capital left to deploy. Our targets are now smaller sites that we can deliver earlier at attractive returns. We have acquired a strong and balanced land bank to date, and we now have the opportunity and the capital to selectively procure sites, which we feel can further enhance our land bank and return on capital. The vacant site levy is a positive for us in this regard, having increased in 2019. This is focusing vendors' minds on disposal timing and increase the number of acquisition opportunities available to us. There is a limited capital resources for private developers in the market for starter home sites in excess of €15 million. This provides us with great buying power and given our capability and capital resources. Smaller sites are now being actively recycled by smaller developers with alternative finance, with competition reduced on these sites. We have identified a strong pipeline for the remaining capital raise proceeds, circa €300 million of a pipeline with over 6,000 units spread across 20 developments, focusing in particular on the mid-sized sites for early delivery of product. We expect to deploy the remaining of the remaining capital from the share placing as previously stated timetable. As we move now to operational delivery, section four, if you can turn to page 19, we outline the scale of the planning commissions we are pushing through the system over the course of 2018 and 2019. It is important to note that 98% of our total lands are zoned residential. We have all the necessary full planning permission in place to deliver all our 2019 targets and limited risk to 2020. In order to further de-risk our near-term unit delivery targets and ensure that we have shovel-ready sites available in the medium term, we are highly active in the fast-track planning process, as illustrated on the chart totaling 5,500 cumulative units in planning applications by H2 of this year. As we move through 2019 and beyond, some of our key planning objectives are: continue to add to additional units to our shovel-ready portfolio to facilitate optionality and flexibility in our delivery process, to get as much of our standardised product and product mix through the planning process to cater for our market. If you can move to page 20, please. To date, we have had a strong execution in construction, having been active on 14 sites, which had over 1,100 units under construction. And we expect to move this to 16 sites by the summer, which will be capable of delivering the 1,000 units into 2020. Further sites we will add in the autumn as planning comes through the system, which we will add to our deliveries on an annualised basis. Site clearance and infrastructure work has commenced at Maryborough Ridge, which we just purchased at Christmas gone. Leadville Park in Kilcock is progressing well as Eden Blackrock Villas, all of which are making strong progress and will deliver units into 19. Summer site openings for 19 will include Stamullen and a recent acquisition announced today at Leakslip. Moving to page 21, here we have significantly de-risked our targets into 19 and 20. As we have said, all the homes 19 deliveries are coming from sites where construction is well progressed and selling has commenced. 85% of our 2020 deliveries will be coming from sites which are currently actively constructing on, with limited delivery risk. Our apartment development at Herbert Hill will be completed in the first half of 19, which means the remainder of our deliveries are housing units which carry limited construction risk, excluding the apartment development at Marina Village. The remaining sites which will be part of our 2020 deliveries are in the midst of the fast-track planning process. Beyond 2020, we have clear visibility in the delivery of our 21 target units. As our land bank stands today, we can now deliver all our IPO targets for 2021. Turning to page 22, CPI. Holmes' ability to control CPI on our sites has been driven by the relationships with our subcontractors and suppliers. This approach is reducing the impact of CPI, particularly between the periods of 2018 and 2020. Our relationships with subcontractors and suppliers are strong because, one, the scale of the operation in working with Glenveagh, we can offer a significant level of work opportunity for those subcontractors and suppliers. Secondly, given the working of multi-year sites, we can provide strong working line of sight for those subcontractors. Next, the standardisation of processes and product across our developments lets subcontractors know the key risks and the man hours required in advance, resulting in efficient execution for both parties. Lastly, by working with subcontractors, significantly reduce their own risk as employers, as we always pay in time and take responsibility for procuring material packages centrally, which provides mutual benefits for both Glenveagh and their subcontractors. Our relationships with material suppliers are much the same. As our size, centralised procurement, site locations, coupled with the fact that we are a PLC, ensure we have positive relationships with our suppliers and reduces the cost on delivering housing. Turning to page 23, the approach I discussed is having a great effect on reducing CPI on a site basis. Here we review two sites on existing starter home product in the GDA, looking at the impact of CPI as we move through the phases. As we can see, pricing packages for our core multi-year home sites are significantly below the 4% the portfolio-wide experienced earlier in 2018. From January 18 to January 19, we experienced a change of 1.5 to 2.27 to our subcontractor packages, which are producing comparable product across both periods. Now that the ramp-up in activities is well progressed, we have strong visibility on our key subcontractor procurement packages for 2019 and 2020. This is because the majority of our subcontractor packages are rolling from phase to phase within developments without much increase in rates. The extent of our buying power is evident, resulting in a decrease in material costs versus 2018. A component of this relates to one-off benefits, which is not replicable in future periods, but nevertheless demonstrates the advantages of scale. Ultimately, we have limited downside risks in 2019 and 2020 costs, as more than 90% of 19 is now locked in, and in excess of 50% has been agreed for 2020. With subcontractors repricing similar jobs on future phases, repricing is becoming less and less of a concern. Turning to page 24, while strong relationships with subcontractors and suppliers are important in controlling CPI in the near term, we are investing ahead of in time to ensure that we make the most of our structural advantages. Identified at the bottom of the slide are ongoing initiatives we have in place to mitigate costs into the future periods. Investment in infrastructure. Obviously, we acquired a quarry last year in North Dublin. This facility will benefit somewhere between 20 to 25 sites when we get them into production and secures infill disposal we will have on sites. Future technology. We embrace future technology across the business, and this is paying dividends across all groups. Standardisation. We talk about standardisation a lot, but now it is being rolled out. It is not just standardisation of the product, it is also standardisation of the processes. This is benefiting the business and will benefit into the future. Off-site construction. We are partnering with our suppliers to move to more off-site construction. Timber frame and modular are key components of this strategy into the future. We are determined as a business to capitalise on our structural advantages over the long term. Moving to page 25, the group finished the year in 2018 with 275 unit sales, 10% ahead of guidance. Performance on our starter home schemes was strong, despite show homes at Taylor Hill and Clwydon not opening till the summer respectively. In 2019, we are benefiting from a number of factors, including 5 new site launches at Knightsgate, Semple Woods, Bedwood Park, Mount Woods and Blackrock Villas, the prospective bulk sale at Herbert Hill, full year show homes availability at Taylor Hill and Clwydon, Marina Village show apartments will be open by H1, and all units are becoming available to the sales team quicker due to the strong progress in construction. As outlined at IPO, the key to hitting our targets was to be active on as many sites as soon as possible. Given that our 725 sales and 219 are coming from 14 sites, this reiterates that point. I'll now hand you back to Justin to go through the Glenveagh living.
Great, thank you, Stephen. So as you might recall, we stated at IPO, we felt private rental, or PRS, would increasingly become a feature of the Irish residential landscape, and that the public sector housing crisis in Ireland would mean Glenveagh could build out a mixed tenure offering over time, akin to what is more typical in the UK. I'm pleased to say that our strategy accords with what we're seeing on the ground, with PRS in particular now recognised as an attractive asset class given Dublin's rapid population growth, low vacancy and rental growth, and PRS yields compressing as we've identified on slide 27. In the Dublin Docklands, for example, where we have two adjacent large PRS sites, East Road and Castle Forbes, there are at least 35,000 new jobs being created by the building of new offices to service international tech firms and others, but there's only 3,500 apartments due to be delivered in that area in the coming years. Of that 3,500 potential supply, we control 35% of them through our two schemes and are now the biggest landowner in that area. Moreover, there is now significant overseas and local capital chasing these PRS opportunities, of which we expect to play a significant role. So how does living make money? Our job is to buy the land well, which we believe we have done, design and master plan well, more details on page 28, and then forward sell those PRS sites to investors who will then pay us to build the apartment schemes for them. Prime yields for PRS are steadily falling in Dublin, although they remain above most European cities. It's an attractive time to be delivering PRS in Ireland over the next 5 years, and our job during 2019 is not just to progress the planning for our schemes, which we are actively doing, but also to engage with investors sufficiently early to de-risk our schemes and to be able to return capital back to PLC. We look forward to reporting back on our progress on PRS later in the year. On the mixed tenure side, this is a new initiative for Ireland, as I mentioned previously, but feedback on our approach so far has been good. We are positioning ourselves as being a significant delivery partner for local authorities and other state agencies on their lands. Procurement in this area will take time, but we are currently actively bidding on two schemes in the Dublin area, which could deliver us a couple of thousand units if we are successful. Overall, we have identified a pipeline of 5,000 units from these types of schemes through procurement, and we only see this growing in the future as mixed tenure becomes more common in Ireland. For those not familiar with mixed tenure as an approach to housing delivery, we've offered a more explanation of the background of the approach on slide 29. So to conclude, slide 31, Glenveagh's had a successful year in 2018 where we met or exceeded all of our first year targets and have taken that momentum into 2019 where we have gotten off to a fast start. We feel good about our ability to hit our 725 target for 2019 and are already turning our attention to 2020 and beyond. Our focus on starter homes will continue and we'll continue to take advantage of our PRS optionality across our entire development land portfolio and seek to capture the mixed tenure vertical over the longer term. We are on track to deploy our remaining capital raise monies and will continue to put health and safety, product quality, customer service and sustainability at the heart of what we do. And with that, I'd ask Emily please to turn the call over to your questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Please ensure your line remains unmuted locally. You'll be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Robert Eason from Goodbody. Robert, please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning. Hi, morning.
Two kind of high-level questions from myself. Last year was kind of there was a uncertainty in the banking market, you know, post the prudential rules. Just want to kind of your read on how it's feeding through now into the current year, given that we're over 12 months through those rules. And as a result, are you seeing any shifts in behaviour, you know, at the lower ASPs towards the higher ASPs, or, you know, regional shifts in behaviour in terms of, you know, customer demand? So that's kind of my first kind of general question. My second general question is just around capital deployment. You talk about land bank peaking at 15,000 units in 2019. How should we think about capital deployment after 2019, given that you're saying that your land bank will have peaked, whether that's, you know, deployment internally or deployment externally to shareholders?
Okay, Robert. Stephen will take the first one and take the second one. I might chip in on capital deployment, but first of all, we'll deal with banking and customer demand.
Yeah, so thanks, Robert. I suppose if you think about it, where we're located and the product mix we have, where majority of our product is at that 350 or below product, we have limited exposure to the upper end of the market. We feel that the lower end product is moving along well. A mortgage availability there seems quite strong. I suppose we've been talking to the banks on various occasions because we are such a key player in the market now. We feel that the macroprudential rules, I suppose they got into a bit of a twist about it last year, but they seem to have sorted that out and there seems to be more availability. They seem to have got through that at the back end of the year and coming into the start of the new year. Mortgage approvals across our business, we're seeing the buyers that are coming in to us today having themselves in good positions in the sense of their mortgage sorted out. On trends across market trends, we're certainly seeing the GDA being very steady and strong. And then on regional markets, we're certainly seeing strong activity in Cork. And obviously, we have two sites now active in Cork. I have to say it's doing very, very well for us, and we're very confident about that. So probably the Cork market is probably 12 to 18 months behind the Greater Dublin market. So things are moving well, and obviously there's a lot of activity now in Cork City. So that would be my answer on that.
Yeah, on land bank, Stephen, capital deployment.
Yeah, on the land bank, I suppose, where do we see ourselves? Well, we'll have the capital deployed as we stated in our timelines. We feel that probably it gives us optionality what we want to do. And obviously, if mixed tenure comes to the forefront later in the year and we see big opportunities there, then I suppose that's a decision to make across the business what we do with that capital. But I suppose once we get it to 15,000 units, we'll be in a very strong position. It gives us a lot of optionality after that. And if the mixed tenure starts coming through the system in a strong way, well, we'll need less capital for those.
Yeah, so Robert, I think to summarise, so we've basically quadrupled our land bank since IPO. It's flexible, it's got optionality against PRS, it's weighted towards starter homes, as we said. We've got some more capital to deploy, and we're on track to do that. So I think we'll be able to definitively talk about the next few years once that capital is deployed and what the land bank looks like. What we said in the pack, to your point, is 15,000 units at peak, and then at maturity, the business will have a five-year land bank. So, again, we're in good shape. We've got, you know, what I call location product price. We bought in the right areas to deliver the right units, and it's part of the market which is the deepest. So we feel good about that, and obviously once we deploy the remainder of our capital, we can then put out some guidance for the future years.
And sorry, if you don't mind, if I just one more follow-up just on capital deployment. As you open up new sites this year, as you ramp up your production to your targets for the next 2 years, how should we think about WIP from the current level of circa 100 million?
Mike will take that, Robert. Yep.
Yeah, so thanks. I suppose our WIP at year end spread across 14 sites is 100 million. There's obviously some new sites in there that haven't got up to full run rate. But also that's slightly skewing the number is we've two apartment developments in there of Herbert Hill and the apartments at Greystones. So we would always talk, and we continue to talk about homes working capital of being circa 6 to 8 million per development. We'll continue to forecast that out. So without oversimplifying it, you can take it that the number of homes developments by between 6 and 8 million should be your working capital on the home side. And then we've talked about on the living PRS side, we look to forward fund those large scale developments. So effectively the working capital will be picked up by the forward fund arrangement.
Yep.
That's great, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Robert.
The next question comes from the line of Ronan Dunphy from Investec. Ronan, please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Just two questions from me. And firstly, you've outlined quite a reassuring picture on cost inflation, and the added detail is very welcome. But maybe just aside from the actual costs, I'm wondering how you see the capacity of the industry to scale higher with your sort of ambitious plans to scale higher as well. Maybe just on labour availability, are there any particular trades that seem to be undersupplied or maybe looking forward a couple of years? Do you see any constraints there or just how you see the general environment? And then secondly, on there's mention of opportunities to increase densities through the planning process on some of your sites, and we've seen a decent potential uplift in units at the East Road site. So just I'm wondering how significant, sort of on a portfolio basis, do you see these opportunities to increase densities and increase units?
Great, thanks, Ronan. So I'll ask Stephen to take those. So first of all, costs, and then density and planning, and I'll have a comment on planning as well.
Yeah, thanks, Ronan. I suppose on densities, obviously we have now designed our standardised product, and we're implementing that across the business. There is a gain there across some of our sites where we're applying higher densities. And obviously some sites where we would have earmarked maybe potentially houses on them, we're increasing that density into apartments. So you look at our application, it's about to go into Dunabate. We're increasing that from 251 to end up at 328. So that's an example of what we're doing across the business. It's hard to define exactly what percentages, and obviously as the market evolves, to work out exactly what the gain will be over the lifetime of the portfolio, but there will be an increase down the line. On costs and the availability, yes, we are controlling our costs. As I've said on a number of occasions, the scale and who we are and what we do, and the ways we roll out the business as well, that's a big thing. So I would say if you take this, you look at a small developer today who has no balance sheet, it's impossible for a supplier to get credit insurance on them, versus our balance sheet of over 800 million. So that gives us an added advantage when we're negotiating with our suppliers. On the subcontractor front, pinch points I would say that are in the system would be the likes of scaffolding. The usual suspects of block layers will always be the same, but we're managing that and we feel comfortable we can roll out our plans. I suppose what we look at as a business, how do we do it? If it takes 1,000 hours to produce a house, how can we bring that hour count down? And that's really the processes that we're rolling out. If you look at timber frame, we've rolled timber frame out across the business. We have a key supply agreement with one of our suppliers, which probably has the potential to deliver somewhere between 500 and 800 units from one operation. We have two or three other parties that are also supplying it. I suppose we're focusing on how we can de-risk the business from that front. I think the smaller developers are probably struggling in the sense of if you're on a 50-unit development and it starts in January and it goes out of operations in November, those subcontractors are not as attracted anymore versus our multi-year sites. So a lot of our sites now have 4, 5, 6 years production on them. That's what I keep saying about subcontractors are quite happy with the terms and conditions we're offering and quite comfortable to roll out. As we scale up the business, if you think about it this way, we have all 1,100 units under construction. To go from here to, say, double output, we feel quite comfortable we can do it. We're rolling out initiatives across the business. We're incentivizing our subcontractors to bring apprentices into the system. We're also incentivizing our subcontractors to help us to find more efficiencies in the system, and that's working across the business. So I think that's a mutual opportunity for both parties, and I think that's a big benefit to both us and the subcontractors. I think that's what's enticing them to come with us.
Yeah, and just on the planning, I think, kudos to our planning team. We have a strong team. They work very hard, coordinated across the business. Obviously, you know, the underwrites we do to go through our respective internal approval process are, I think, very conservative, but in a good way. So the team obviously are unlocking better densities, and there's also the switchability between houses and apartments on our sites. Either into houses or into apartments to give us flexibility and also maximise our exit options, because obviously certain locations now are very attractive for PRS, as we've indicated. So implicitly, that means we return capital quicker. So again, we're endeavouring to have a business which thinks like investors. But to your point on East Road, I think, and then well done to the team there, the 450 underwrite in East Road is actually 560 in practice through the planning application process. And again, I think we've got embedded value in the portfolio. We haven't yet guided that number, but obviously at some point we will be able to demonstrate the value out of the team. So it's a good point to raise.
Great, thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Colin Sheridan from Davy. Colin, please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, hey, Colin.
Good morning.
Just a couple of follow-on questions from Roland's, and then I've one additional as well. I suppose just in terms of the potential gains that are there in the Glenveagh Living Land Bank in particular, I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about how much of that might be down to regulation changes around apartment standards. I know, Justin, you referred to also maybe a little bit of conservatism in there as well, but it'd be interesting just to get your take on what maybe the contribution of those different factors are. And then following on the materials point, I know you've referred to off-site manufacturing in a couple of places and specifically to modular as well. Wouldn't mind if you just comment within, you know, single family, what ultimately the potential for either timber frame and particularly modular might be within the land bank itself. And then finally, just on the land market, I mean, I think we've seen probably increased selling in the land market in terms of more vendors. And I wonder if there's been any better value in some of the acquisitions that, say, you've announced this morning, whether there's a read-through for better margins on the acquisition on those lands as well.
Right, okay, appreciate it, Colin. So I'll take the one on GL and the land bank, the potential gains. Stephen will deal with off-site manufacturing, and then Stephen can lead with his view on land, and I'll jump in afterwards, that's all right. So on the GL land bank, so again, we've guided 1,850 units across the four sites, the two in the Docklands and Dublin, Tala and Galway, and those are pre-planning numbers. Obviously, our aspirations and what we believe we'll deliver in practice is considerably in excess of 1,850. And I think the driver of that is a few things. Obviously, if you take the two Dockland sites first, where we bought the land, the first East Road was a structured sale process between one other counterparty and us, and we were able to take it down and give the counterparty zero execution risk. And then Castle Falls, we took that down entirely off market. They are very large sites. They are also very scarce sites. They're also part of, you know, the regeneration area in that locality in the North Docklands. And obviously, therefore, from the council's perspective and the planning board's perspective, being in important employment areas, if we can deliver greater height, greater density as part of overall coordinated placemaking, then they're all ears, and they're very supportive, and we're delighted with that, because obviously we've got the ability to deliver, you know, very important schemes there. Also, I think the other point, which we haven't guided the market, but it's embedded value, which we're looking to unlock, is where is East Road, which was underwritten, as I say, 450, and we're in for planning at 560, is purely resi. Castle Forbes, which we've guided at 650, also has substantial non-residential elements, so office, hotel, etc., which, again, we're endeavouring behind the scenes to unlock as we also get planning for the residential aspect. So, again, part of placemaking and part of the embedded value of the business. And you'll see that from living. You're also seeing that from homes, and that's why we feel very good about, you know, the land we bought and what we're able to do in terms of returning capital on it. So with that, Stephen, do you want to deal with offsite manufacturing?
Yeah, thanks, Colin. I suppose the big thing is that obviously we're talking about modular, but I suppose two key aspects is that the timber frame operation that we're presently rolling out is working, and is working very well. So I'd say for the medium term future, housing will remain in timber frame. I think what we've really looked at is apartments and the delivery apartments and how we can make that more efficient. On how we could roll that out, and I suppose we are really examining modular for that. Obviously, there's a couple of things there you've got to take into account: fire certification, etc., height, and beyond that. And working with how to interface the buildings with your cores. So we probably feel that timber frame in the medium term will remain to the housing side of it, and then long term is trying to get a solution on the apartments through modular. We feel that's where the systems are going. Obviously, both products are evolving rapidly. We've seen technology change both products, and timber frame has obviously got more advanced, but also modular. You know, modular is now almost 90% when it gets to biometrics, so that is a big solution. And obviously, the more you can produce off-site, the more you can control your cost, and obviously it gives you a guarantee of supply and delivery. On the land side of it, I suppose, yeah, the land market is quite active at the moment, in the sense of we are seeing plenty of deals on market and off-market. What are we doing? I suppose our main focus is what we're trying to target. We said to the market we were now targeting 20% plus margin. We are achieving that on all acquisitions going forward. So we feel quite comfortable. Probably too early to indicate where margin will go from here. It's always dependent on how quick we can get it into the system and how quick we can get it working. But more and more of the deals that we're doing is 20% plus margin today.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, because again, well done to the land team. I think the value is off market across the business, and I also think there's less competition for starter home multi-year schemes, because, you know, if you're a small builder or you're relying on high-cost finance, et cetera, they're less attractive because they take longer, et cetera. So, again, we're well set with what we bought. We're buying at 20% marginal better. We feel good about what we've done so far with the capital raise monies, and the view is to do more of the same, and we'll obviously report our progress back to the market in due course.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
The next question comes from the line of Henry Dixon from Man GLG. Henry, please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Can you hear me okay? Sorry, just checking.
Hi, Henry, how are you?
Yeah, hi. Sorry, at this late stage of the call, maybe I'm sort of rephrasing questions that have already been asked, but I would appreciate if you could be as sort of specific as possible. If I think just in the short term, clearly I've taken your volume guidance in the longer term, but in the shorter term, if we think about this year, if there are three simple levers on the P&L to be pulled, could I ask you what you're most confident about, be it volume, average selling price, or the forward sales of PRS?
Right, okay, let's just get that right. Volume, ASPs, and
forward
PRS.
Sales of PRS. What are you most confident about in the year of
2020? I think we're most confident about volume and ASPs. But obviously PRS is moving at a rate of knots, and there's a lot of demand and very limited supply. So I think we feel good about all of them, Henry. And obviously we've got to, you know, you don't just pull one lever and then hit another lever. Sometimes you have to pull multiple levers at the same time. So I think we're in good shape.
Okay, understood.
And therefore 2 months in, I think we're all about you know, we de-risked 19 and we're already turning to 20 and beyond.
Yeah, and I think, Henry, the most important thing for us, what we'd like to be is by the summer, have pretty much the 725 units in the bag, and then it's pretty much deliver them back into the back end of the year, and then start progressing to 2020 because we'll have the show house open. So the key now, I suppose, where the business is now maturing is it has the ability now to go longer in, and we can see into the following year, which we didn't have this ability last year, but it goes back to that point, being on those 14 sites gives us that ability.
Yep.
Okay. Again, on land buying and capital allocation, if I can push you again here, again, I guess rephrasing existing questions, but I just want to be very specific on this.
Yep.
We talk about improving land margins in purchase. I just want to sort of take you back to guess which are in excess of target set 2 years ago. Clearly, since 2 years ago, we have a very different share price. And our feeling, I think, is it's, you know, potentially just short-term markets, be it investment markets, as in fund managers.
Yeah.
And that the situation on the ground has just been as is, if you see what I mean. Your comments around improved buying margins, I want to understand, is that because you are exercising your ability off market, or again, if you like, has the emotion, for want of a better word, of the share price actually fed into the land buying market in Dublin as well? Does that question make sense to you or not?
Yeah, it does. Look, so Henry, we're obviously cognizant of share prices, but we can't control them. We can just focus on what we can control on the business. So again, you know, the team are very disciplined about what we buy and what and why we buy it. So I think it's the off market is the answer to your question. And that's because there's few people who want to buy this stuff, can buy this stuff, and there's people who are looking to exit the market or people looking to refinance their debt exposures. But they don't want a sort of a hue and cry and publicity about it, or it's not the type of kit you can actively put in the Irish Times and 10 people turn up. So part of the patience we've demonstrated is to basically be able to get very good value off market, and the hurdle which Stephen and the guys have set to the land team is 20% margin or better. So our hurdles have increased as we've obviously built out our land bank and as we now, you know, face the deployment of the remaining capital we have.
Okay, perfect. All right, well, I think I'm due to see you at 2 o'clock on Friday. I look forward to that.
Excellent.
Good stuff. Thank you.
We have no further questions in the queue. This is a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your keypad now.
Okay, so Andy, we have no more questions?
No more questions coming through.
Okay, so look, to conclude, we appreciate you dialing in and listening. Thank you for your support over the last 12 months. We look forward to seeing many of you on the road in the coming weeks. Obviously, if you have any other follow-up questions, feel free to reach out to Connor, Michael, Stephen, or me, and we look forward to our continued progress as a business. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your lines.